Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, April 3rd, 2014. And I just want to say something about a type of fear-mongering that occurs. It is done by the government. It is done by little minions that run around the internet who think they're important. They sit in grandma's basement, don't have anything to do, and make up stuff. And here's kind of the scenario. They don't have any real data. So they go around and they find everything that happens. It might be an earthquake, or there might be an asteroid that comes through the atmosphere, or it might be Superstorm Sandy, or whatever it is. And whatever they want to point to, whether it's the United Nations study group on global warming, whether it's, like I say, people sitting in grandma's basement that have an internet page trying to tell you that Planet X is here because they saw a bolide go through the atmosphere last week. Let's go back to, let's say, the 1800s eruption of Krakatoa. Or let's go back to other events. What if that happened today? Would that mean Planet X is here? Would that mean that global warming is a fact of science? The answer is no. Extraneous, unrelated events do not give you first-hand data. These are second or tertiary interpretations of data. And so you have to put this into perspective. So today this is rampant. Like I say, it doesn't seem to matter who you look to. People are using this in the, sometimes they're trained scientists, like the UN panel on global warming. These people are bona fide credentialed scientists, but they're using unrelated, unsubstantiated links to things that have no they have no bearing on the end result that they're trying to promote. Clearly they have an objective, and they're using anything, throwing in anything, including the kitchen sink. Remember 2012, people predicted the end of the world December 21st, 2012. The same thing, everything in the kitchen sink, it all pointed in to that. And remember that was a well-orchestrated for almost a decade. The end of the world 2012 started, and a lot of people jumped on that bandwagon. And then when it didn't happen, they kind of hid for a while, and then all of a sudden they're back. So at any rate, just beware of people that really don't have data, real data, that points to their objective. If they have a look at what they're trying to promote, and then watch them use everything in the world to try and support that objective. When I talk about Planet X, a lot of people try and corner me and say, well, when is it going to come? What's your prediction? And I always, my standard response is, I don't make any type of prediction based on vacuous results. I would require real data. And right now there's some yo-yos running around the internet claiming Planet X is here. Some are claiming they see it. They have photos, but they don't have any real data. It's like taking a picture of a robin on the snow and then saying, well, that robin's at the South Pole, but there's no corroborating evidence to suggest that their photo of a robin sitting in the snowbank is at the South Pole, if you see what I mean. Anyway, enough of that, enough wasting time, but it's just so rampant today, I want you to beware of that. When people come up with a cause and then try and support it with everything in the kitchen sink, beware. Just a quick comment on Flight 370. Obviously, there's a lot of rotten fish in Denmark. Nobody in the world believes the U.S. government, which is it's about time the whole world woke up to what's going on. And now, like, you could throw Obama out, but then what would you do? Put in a bunch of lying Republicans? The problem is the whole system is broken, and the United States needs a replacement government. from wall to wall, corner to corner, get all the cockroaches out, all the lobbyists, all of the special interests, the United Nations, I mean, up and down the ladder, the Queen of England, whoever else is operating there, Israel operating, the NSA and all the security agencies, the CIA being the police force of the World Bank. It's got to be all flushed out. But I have a statement. It would be easier to eradicate all the cockroaches in New York City than it would be to eradicate all of the political interest in Washington, D.C. It just has its fingers every place. Okay, enough of political commentary. But on Flight 370, obviously, that plane is somewhere. It didn't go down in the ocean, and now they're saying goodbye. Oops, too late. We didn't find it. That whole dog and pony show for almost a month. And look at my comment has always been, look at the amount of news coverage that's been dedicated to that and what's been going on behind the scenes. Wow, a lot. So at any rate, obviously that Flight 370 is someplace. I've seen all types of reports. I'm not going to report on anything on this show other than the fact that that plane is somewhere on dry land. The people that were on the plane are somewhere. And there's a real story behind that. End of story. Just a quick report this past week. The United Nations released their latest report on global warming, saying that we are headed for catastrophic failure of society, of weather. Like I say, pointing to Sandy, the storm Sandy of a year ago, and as a result of global warming. And it's just so absurd, and then Obama reacts. But you have to understand that global warming is nothing but a ruse to cover for control of water in many other aspects of your life. So just a scientific ruse is all it is, with paid scientists. And those people, they're just squealy pig happy to be at the top of the list of scientists promoting global warming. And if the government wanted them to promote that the moon is made of green cheese, they would do that also. Whatever it takes to get that paycheck. Last week, listen to my show, I talked about a comparison between the phone system and an imaginary road system, where we had not one road system in the country, but we had six road systems in the country, all parallel, owned and operated by various road companies. And I thought of something to add to that scenario this week. What if you got to the Canadian border, for example, and you found out that your motor did not operate with Canadian gasoline, so you had to literally buy a new car? And that's the case with the phone companies. Many of them do not operate under the standards of foreign standards, so basically you have to convert your telephone. Many of the newer phones already adapt to that, but the previous generation phones, if you wanted to go to a foreign country, you couldn't use your phone because your company decided to use a technology that was different than the foreign technologies. And so anyway, it would be equivalent to driving up to the border in your car, and you would have to literally get a new car to drive into the foreign country. How absurd. Anyway, just a further comment on that. For more information, listen to my show last week. Of course, all of my radio shows going back a decade are archived on my webpage, jmccsci.com. This in from a listener, an email saying that Alberta, Canada has a program that people found out about kind of under the table. The oil companies were being solicited, or the oil companies were soliciting input into the rewriting of the school curriculums that is occurring right now in Alberta, Canada. So imagine that, the oil companies having a hand in rewriting school curriculum. I mean, where on earth does this come from? What are these people thinking? I can just see the new banner for kids. Just say no to ecological energy. But you have to understand that the oil companies, the people that own them on the top, are the same people that control water, and Canada is the world's richest water resource country. So if you want more information on that, read my book, Water, my ebook, Water. But at any rate, in Alberta, the oil companies rewriting school curriculums. I'm sorry I didn't get a lot more research done, but I do want to mention this again. There is a Cancer Buyers Club, just like the movie The Dallas Buyers Club, but for cancer, where people in this country are refusing to go into chemo, into the standard medical treatment for cancer, chemo and radiation, and are seeking natural remedies outside the country. So they have buyer groups that are going and buying and bringing it back. I did not have time to do more research on that, but it's a topic I really want to pursue, because it's this whole cancer thing has just got to be exposed. Last week and the last few weeks, I have been talking about the movie Noah. Well, it opened last Friday, and I went to see it. So I'm going to give a list of comments here. But the reason I'm talking about this is because one can relate it to science. The science, and I have a two-CD set, my 18-hour two-CD set of lectures, The Physics of Ancient Celestial Disasters, covers one of the topics is Noah's Flood. And so at any rate, it was interesting to see how Hollywood twisted the movie Noah in this, what should be a very basic, rudimentary, extremely important aspect of our history that every school child should know and should understand exactly what happened, that this was a worldwide flood. It was torrential rains for 40 days and 40 nights. The ocean level rose by hundreds of feet. The earth was changed, and the human race was just about wiped out. Noah began once again to populate the earth, and as you go down through the chain of offspring, you come down to actually the Israelites and Moses, etc. But here was the first thing I noticed, that they classified the movie as sci-fi fantasy. So Noah's Ark, etc., was classified as sci-fi, science fiction, fantasy. And I thought that was amazingly interesting, just the classification. I would have, after seeing the big rock monsters knocking people around, protecting Noah in the ark as the hordes of people came at him as the floods were coming, I would have likened this more to Lord of the Rings than a biblical true story. But at any rate, let me go through a number of topics here. I found out more about Russell Crowe, the lead actor in this, and the director going to the Pope, trying to get a private audience to get the Pope to watch the movie. And if I were the Pope, I would have publicly said, I ain't watching this movie, because they were trying to use that as leverage to say, look, the Pope watched the movie. And so everybody else would have to run out and watch it then. I went to see it because I wanted to see what the agenda they were trying to promote. And I feel a little bit sorry for the actors. Russell Crowe is a much better actor. The part was very weak. And his wife's part was okay, but the parts could have been written stronger for the stronger actors that were in the movie. And that's why, who knows if this will win any awards this coming year, but that's my commentary on that. I think Russell Crowe is a wonderful actor. And, for example, movie Master and Commander, which won many Oscars for cinematography, everything else, Russell Crowe was a very powerful, very subtly good actor. But in this, unfortunately, I think that the movie was lacking and therefore did not support the actor. let me see what else here. I noticed too that he always in the movie was maintaining fire, so they had a lot of reality in the movie about survival. I didn't see any water filters in the movie. They didn't show people drinking much, except he did make some wine at one point where they finally landed. When they finally landed on land, he made some wine. But other than that, and I thought about it, well, gee, if there's the Noah flood and this is coming from a comet, that water is going to be really, really polluted. And so one would need a water filter to get all the pollution out. You think, well, rainwater is not polluted, but remember, this is coming from a comet. It's going to have naphtha, it's going to have ammonia in it, it's going to have hydrocarbons, it's going to have nitrogen-hydrogen compounds, it's going to have dust in it, it's going to be bad news rain. So in that case, you would really want a water filter, even though you're sitting on an ocean of water, and the rain is coming down torrentially, but really none of it is very suitable for drinking. That's one thing I really noticed. Also, the storage of water would be very important, making barrels or some kind of water containment so that you would have fresh water, clean fresh water. I did like the big rectangular ark concept, but unfortunately the way they built it would not be very seaworthy. And here's the problem. Anytime you have right angles in a boat, this is something I know a little bit about. I've designed boats. I've built boats, wooden boats, the boats that would go on the ocean. I've maintained boats as a hobby. And so I know a little bit about boat building and structure. I studied the physics of boat building and the engineering of boat building, and actually designed and built some ocean-going vessels. And so there's a design that's called the design technique, or the design form is called hard chine. And that's a type of hull where the walls of the outer walls of the boat come down and then make a sharp angle, but they're never 90 degrees like they had with the Ark. But still, given Hollywood, I thought that was a very interesting take, rather than building the traditional round bottom boat, because in that day it would have been a lot more difficult to build a round bottom boat of that size and dimension. So basically it was built like a big oil tanker with many levels in it for the various animals and snakes and bugs and birds and everything else that had to go in this thing. Remember, it was about 2 football fields long, so this was one big boat, and it mainly was harboring all of these animals. So that's one comment that I had about the design of the boat, but I thought that was relatively good inception on the part of Hollywood relative to the design of the boat. But you have to understand that this was one major league project for Noah and his family, and they had to have serious advance notice of this event coming, and also to have a clue as to when to finish the ark so it was done on time. If you didn't have the hull or the deck patched up and it started to rain, goodbye ark. Because part of the ark design was having a ballast in it, and I liked how they did that. They built a square boat with the ballast in the bottom of rock, so that this vessel would maintain in the rough seas, maintain upright. So at any rate, I thought many aspects of the movie were excellent in that respect. I always measure a movie as the way I like it. The way I would rate this movie, or any movie, is would I want to go see it again? But at any rate, I really feel sorry for the public and kids today. Hollywood just can't get it right. And here's kind of the core issue. In the Ark, Noah is in the Ark, the family is in the Ark, they're broken away, and Noah sits down to tell the tale of Genesis. And he goes through Genesis, and he said, I've told you this before, but I'm going to tell you again. This is the way the world was created. and the story of Adam and Eve and the original sin and Cain killing Abel and Cain moving off to the east, etc. And then the cities being Cain building up the cities and then the evil that was spread across the world. And then they do something that's very, I don't know how to interpret it. You'd have to interpret this for yourself. But they mix creationism with evolution. And so that's kind of a controversial issue. I'm not going to talk about that too much. But I'll tell you something. They didn't have any information about comets in there. Very noticeably, the real issue here is that there was a comet. We passed through the tail of a comet for about 40 days and 40 nights. That's where the torrential rain came from. And there was obviously no hint of that in this movie. Clearly, they had gone to NASA for support, for informational support. And so when they got to the part where in the Genesis story, as Russell Crowe or Noah is talking about the Genesis of the let there be light in the first day, etc., and then comes the earth being formed, they showed the traditional NASA spinning dust cloud forming the planets with the earth molten, etc., and then God put the waters there, and the land grew out of the waters. But see, this is not the same as the NASA story, because in real NASA fairy tale science, they can't tell you where the water came from. It doesn't fit, because in a hot, molten earth, all the atmosphere and water would have boiled off into outer space, and it wouldn't be there. So then you have to somehow attribute the water coming afterwards, and they don't know how to account for that. So they have all kinds of scenarios, like little snowballs hit the earth and counted for the oceans. Well, if you go out to little snowballs, they don't have any water on them. So that doesn't account for where the oceans came from, nor where the salt came in the oceans, or how lakes like the Great Lakes of the upper United States or the Great Lakes, other Great Lakes around the world, don't have any salt at all in them. And then you look at other seas, like the inland seas, like the Adriatic, etc., and they're very heavy on salt, the Dead Sea, etc., extremely heavy on salt, or the salt flats out in the western United States where salt oceans had dried up, giving it an extremely high salt content. And so anyway, obviously they consulted with NASA. And so I have a little side note here. When I used to be foolish enough to look for venture capital funding for projects, I would inevitably go to a venture capital firm or a company that I wanted to work with, and I'd always have them sign a non-disclosure agreement, and in that agreement was the fact that they would not take this information elsewhere. And specifically, I always said, you cannot take this information to NASA, because they're a bunch of information thieves at NASA. That's what they do. There's very few original ideas within the confines of government science. And so at any rate, what would inevitably happen is, as you got through the process of funding and other venture capitalists would have to come in and look at the project, etc., somewhere, sometime during this review process, and it just happened every time, literally every time, that one guy would sit back, and it just was the same motion every time. He would roll back in his chair and say, "You know, I got a buddy over at NASA that could look at this and tell us if this is a good idea or not." And the way it rolled out of their mouth was always the same. "I got a buddy over at NASA that could review this." And it was like, that's where the negotiation ended every time. Because the public, especially the investment capital public, are ignorant. They're stupid. They don't have a clue what's going on, or that guy over at NASA is a tier two buffoon and has no clue what's going on in the real world of science. But at any rate, so this is what happened to the Noah movie. When they get to the part about the solar system forming and creation, etc., there all of a sudden somebody in the directorship of that movie had a buddy at NASA, and that's where they got the video, the animation. Obviously, the animators drew what NASA told them to draw. Clearly not what happened in the real NOAA story. So, unfortunately, I would rate the movie, like I say, on a level with maybe Lord of the Rings, but really not on a level with Lord of the Rings, which was probably a much better directed movie with much better special effects, etc. But at any rate, okay, enough of that. I won't talk about that anymore. But just one comment that the churches treat the Noah story as a myth. And once I was at a group event, and there was a priest there from the Catholic Church, and I said, what is the official church teaching about Noah and the flood? And the response I got was that, well, you know, some of these things we have to take with a grain of salt, that they're not really, you can't take them at 100% face value. And he just kind of brushed it off as mythology. I asked a school teacher in the Florida school system, this was many years ago, maybe a decade ago or more, but somebody who was at the very high up in the Florida school system teaching history, honors history in Florida school system. And I believe it was in southern Florida. But anyway, he had a big major high school in Florida. But I was sitting there and I picked up the history book that they were using in high school honors history class. And it was about world history. And I went to the very beginning and I started looking through it. And, you know, it's like the old story of, you know, man created in Mesopotamia and crawled out and covered the earth, and all of the races of all the countries came from that, and they crossed the Bering Strait, and all this complete nonsense. Complete nonsense as far as history is concerned. But I said, where's the part about Noah's flood or the worldwide flood? And the response I got was, oh, we don't teach that. That's just nonsense. That's just myth. We don't teach that in real school. So that's the level of knowledge, so to speak, regarding the Noah's flood with the general public. And this movie furthers that perception, the wrong perception, the incorrect perception, mixed with the NASA fairy tale science perception. So I would give it about a zero as far as realism. And if I were the Pope, I wouldn't have watched it either. I wouldn't have given my blessing to any of that movie, although he did apparently give a personal blessing to Russell Crowe and the director when they came to visit him at the Vatican. Just a quick comment. Obamacare supposedly hit their goal of 7 million people, which it's kind of like Noah, hurricane prediction. They make this prediction for, say, above average hurricane season, and there aren't any hurricanes at all, like a year ago. And midway through the year, the hurricane season, they will drop their prediction, and then they'll drop it and drop it to the end until their prediction comes out right. Well, that's what's going on with Obamacare. How can you have, in a country of 300 million people, you have 7 million people sign up and you say they've reached their goal? The people that have signed up for Obamacare are the people who could not get insurance before, many of whom have health problems and are going to tax the system out of existence. The younger people are not signing up for Obamacare because they know that once they sign up, their rates are going to go through the ceiling. And they're going to be paying for all the people who have health problems, who've had bad lifestyles, etc., who have signed up. So, literally, Obamacare is a disaster waiting to happen as these people, these hordes of people, finally hit medical treatment for all of the, and I'm not saying everybody is due to bad lifestyle, but a lot of them. And so, this is a financial disaster that's going to make the housing crisis look like an afternoon picnic. A quick comment on Planet X. What I'm going to do here in a little while is I'm going to be talking about Planet X issues And I'm going to be using the movie Noah as kind of a takeoff, because that was a Planet X type encounter. And so what I've been saying all along is that there are many Planet X type objects. Earth has encountered them in the past. The Moses event, which occurred many thousands of years after the Noah event, was also a comet encounter, so this could literally be classified as a Planet X type of event. And not Nibiru, because we know it was Venus. Venus, the comet, was captured into the solar system by Jupiter and passed through the solar system, orbiting, diminishing its orbit, and finally encountered Mars, took the atmosphere and oceans off of Mars, and then as it encountered Earth on two occasions, we know this because of the Mayan history. You read about this in the Popol Vuh, and then the Mayans and literally all other nations that passed history down from that time period talked about Venus. So those were two events, Planet X type events. Farther back in history, there were other events in which Earth encountered major league Earth-changing types of events. Well, look at the Noah event. It was near Earth-wide devastation of the human race. The human race nearly went extinct, the human race as we know it. And so at any rate, obviously there were groups that survived that flood and lived and then prospered afterwards. So there had to be small groups like Noah around the world that eventually succeeded and came back to populate the Earth. But what I'm going to do is talk about various types of Planet X encounters, hypothetical encounters. What can Planet X do? The minimal case, the maximum case, and I've talked about this a great deal. I want to tell you that my books, including the very first book that I put out in the modern series of books, I have books and papers that were published long ago, but around the Planet X, Comets and Earth Changes book, came out around the year, 2001, somewhere in there. It remains the top book on the subject, and that's the book you have to read to understand the topic of Planet X. It's called Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, and then the whole series of books after that supplement it and talk about all kinds of other topics, including my weather book, the Diamond Principle book, on and on. But, okay, I'll come back to that topic in a couple minutes here, because that's going to be the main science topic. First, I want to talk about what are known as Hilbert's problems. These are mathematical problems, and also called the Clay Institute Millennium problems, the Millennium Prize problems. But this relates to my new book, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. Now, this is a book that really everybody should read. It's written for the general public, just like all of my books. And it deals with the complex world of computer encryption and secure computing today. So it would be the first really in-depth view for most people out there. It's a $13.95 ebook. It's only available in ebook format. And it's on my webpage, just released March 5th of this year, literally 7 years to the day after my book Calculate Primes came out. In the book, I talk about what is known as Hilbert's problems. In 1900, David Hilbert was a famous mathematician, literally the top spokesperson mathematician in the world at the time. And the top mathematicians met in Paris, and Hilbert laid down what he called the top 24 problems, unsolved problems in mathematics at the time. And included in this was something called the Riemann hypothesis, a relatively complex equation that related prime numbers to the integers. The integers are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the prime numbers are the numbers that, by definition, only have themselves and one as factors. They're not factorable. And so the whole issue here was that By the way, just as a technicality, Hilbert, for a long time, they talked about his 23 problems at the turn of the century, but really there were 24. In the margin of his notes, he had a 24th problem, but the point is, number 8 on his list was the Riemann hypothesis, along with some other prime number unsolved prime number problems, which I won't go into detail on this show because that's a little bit too esoteric. But here's the point, that the Riemann hypothesis was based on an equation that had been known about for a long time, for basically 100 years or possibly longer. Other mathematicians had worked on this, but the key here was that the prime numbers were listed on one side of the equation, and the integers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc., out to infinity, were listed on the other side of the equation. And somehow they were hoping that this equation would shed light on the prime numbers. That was the entire purpose of the Riemann hypothesis being on the list. And it was considered the top unsolved problem in all of mathematics at that time. Move 100 years forward into the future, up to the year 2000. A group called the Clay Mathematical Institute, Mathematics Institute, devised what they called the 7 Millennium Prize math problems. These were prizes, and they devoted $7 million to the anybody who could solve these problems, so $1 million per problem. And the Riemann hypothesis was along in the same list. DARPA, the Defense Department Research Agency, in 2008 made up a list of unsolved problems that they would like to see solved. In their list also was included the Riemann hypothesis. And so why am I talking about this? Because encryption today, that is the ability to encode computer data and the transmission of computer data on lines over satellite links, etc., depends on the ability to calculate prime numbers. When I wrote my book, Calculate Primes, and distributed it to the public in 2007, basically it instantly destroyed the use of prime numbers for encryption. There were other methods, there are other methods of encrypting data, but nobody ever imagined that that problem would be solved, the ability to calculate prime numbers directly. And a lot of people are going, well, boy, this is way over my head. I don't know if I want to listen anymore. But it's very important because here's the point. There are other encryption techniques available using elliptical formulas, using random number generators, various other mathematical techniques for scrambling data so it can't be intercepted by intermediaries or also broken into in computer systems. But here's the point. The encryption codes being used for the public, for you, the public, are still based on prime numbers. And this is the problem. And so what I try and do in this book is twofold. First of all, to inform the public that you are being handed a garbage profile of computer protection or computer security. You are being sold computer security that doesn't work, that the government can get into very easily, and not only the government, but hackers. So that's one thing that I want to point out here. The other thing I want to point out is that as individuals, as citizens, as people trying to live in the society we're living in today, it's going to become more and more important that the world, the citizens out there, become savvy about this issue of encryption. And this is the second point, very important, how the public can start to fight back, how they can start to get into some of these encryption systems. And let me use a particular example the human chip that Obama is trying desperately to get into everyone out there. I've seen videos where they put it in somebody's hand in between the thumb and the first finger. There are other places where they can put these, but that's the particular video that I saw. And then when they get done putting it in, injecting it with a needle into this person, then there's a bunch of people in the background clapping like, oh, isn't this wonderful? Now we are able to inject chips in the people to track their every move, their their health records. All of your information would be contained in that chip. Well, gee, isn't that organized and just parsimonious as can be? But at any rate, the issue here is that what if you, as a citizen, could get into those chips? And by the way, I've always said, do not take the chip. It's the number. We're at the point of biblical prophecy where all of this is coming true. I mean, we're at the point of biblical prophecy where they're starting to force people to take the number, the biblical number, and that's in the chip format. But what if we could get into these chip networks and jam them with all of the technology and the effort being put into collecting data on people? If you could jam and alter this data so when it came into a database it was all jumbled and scrambled, that would be an effective way to defeat it. So that, like I have mentioned this before, make a person look like a dog from the veterinary's office and make the dog look like some person. And so the switch this all around so that it's a big jumbled mess. And once, I'll tell you something, in a so-called organized data system, once you discover flaws, then you don't know where all the flaws are. And this is one of the key elements of, for example, terrorism, is to strike at various places without notice. In a database, if one strikes without notice in various places, that raises the question of, is all of the rest of the data sound? How do you verify the rest of the data? And that's the trick, that you don't have to go out and change the data in everybody. You just have to change it in some of the people. That raises questions as the stability and validity of the data in the entire data bank. And so with a very small minority of the population jamming the coded system, you could break that system down. So at any rate, this is something I know a lot about. I worked in the secure computing industry. For 10 years of my life, I taught computer science at the university level for many years of my life, and so it's something I happen to know quite a bit about. You can read more about my bio in the book. But anyway, I wanted to spend a little bit of time on this show and encourage more people to read this book. As I said, it's a bit esoteric, but you have to start to get up to speed. In the area of let's call it monitoring public awareness and designing information to alter public awareness, what I call social engineering, there are groups. For example, there's one called the New America Foundation. Sounds pretty American to me. Well, when you look under the cover, you find out what these groups are. This is a Washington think tank, a conservative think tank, that monitors policy in the United States and also does a lot of recommendation into the government. The topics they cover are national security, technology, asset building, health, energy, education, economy. They're based in Washington, D.C. and New York City. And look at the string of people associated with this. In 2007, what I want to point out is that a recent president of the New America Foundation just happened to also be the analyst, the national political analyst for CNN, what I call the Candy Nugget News, which shapes a lot of public opinion. So isn't that an interesting tie? But also look at these other associations. In 2007, Steve Cole, managing editor of the Washington Post, became the president. Look at these information and ties, but with the news media and this so-called think tank. Also, Google executive chairman Eric Schmidt is the chairman of the board. Look at these associations. Google sold out and is the huge misinformation search engine that can search into you, categorize you and all of your computer searches, and put that in a giant database. Google literally pulls every conversation, every photo, every text message that you do on a modern smartphone and puts it into a databank, along with other applications like Facebook. These are all bought and owned by the CIA, by daughter companies of the CIA. And what people don't realize is there is a gigantic, extremely powerful network of people who are influencing the news media. Look at Flight 370, the blanket coverage that was organized to put up the phony cover story for the American public. And most people are sitting there watching it with their mouth hanging down and have no clue what is going on. And the reason I'm telling you this is because if you look at science, if you look at the blanket coverage of government, if you look at the UN study on global warming, if you look at NASA, say their influence into the movie Noah, the influence into the public's mind is just overwhelming, and these people don't sleep. While you're out there trying to make a paycheck and support your family and just live a normal life, these people are working overtime to burden you with Obamacare, with a housing crisis, everything else possible to just bring you down to your knees and to the point where you can't let go. You have no place to go. Okay, at any rate, I just wanted to mention another topic here. I got an email from a listener. This is regarding a high school student in Canada who won a high school science project by buying a Geiger counter and taking it to the food store. This is in Canada. Result that the food from China is highly radioactive. The food that comes out of the Pacific Ocean, whether it's seaweed or kelp or what other food products that might come out of the Pacific Ocean, plus seafood of all types, are highly radioactive. This is a student in Canada winning a high school science project by taking a Geiger counter to the grocery store. On to the main science topic. Okay, dealing with the various types of effects that could occur due to a Planet X type object. I've already talked about the NOAA event, where we basically passed through the tail of a comet. Not a lot of gravitational, not a lot of electrical effects, simply a huge influx of pollution, part of that pollution being in the form of water, H2O. But as I said, imagine the dust, the powder, the pollution, the hydrogen compounds mixed with the hydrogen nitrogen, the hydrogen carbon compounds, the acids that were coming in with that rain, just extremely filthy rain that poured down on the Earth for 40 days and 40 nights, a Planet X type encounter. We know that from the ancients, going back to the ancient Egyptians, that they talked about 5 events in the past 10,000 years. They said every time we get up running, some major event comes and takes us down to our knees. And so that was the priest cults talking to Solon, who was the great uncle of Aristotle, bringing that information back to the young Greek nation, which we call the ancient Greeks now. But the Greeks were a very young nation, and they said, well, what's the history of the Greeks? And they said, well, you people were just sheep herders the people that lived through the event were sheep herders and basically living up in the mountains. And that's exactly what the Colburn talks about, is that the people who survived that event that the Colburn talks about, very clearly the Colburn is talking about numerous events in history. They talk about the first regeneration of man and the second regeneration of man. And the Noah event, the Moses event, where the Moses event, the nucleus of the comet came much closer. There were electrical effects, the pillar of fire going up into the sky that Moses saw, and the rain of rocks that Moses talks about being pummeled by huge rocks coming in from outer space, not to mention the pollution of oil, the burning naphtha, and that was ignited as the hydrocarbons hit the upper atmosphere and encountered oxygen, that was ignited by the meteorites which were on fire coming through the atmosphere. So you can imagine this tremendous pollution event witnessed by Moses and the Israelites. And then, so let me talk about some other hypothetical events that could happen if a Planet X type object came through the solar system. And now remember that a lot of people talk about brown dwarf or this or that. Any object that's the size of our moon or larger, I would consider a Planet X type object, or even the size of a smaller moon, say some of the smaller moons of Saturn. These would be sufficient to create a large comet that could drastically affect Earth. And so Planet X, remember there are many of these objects, and NASA, I talked about this over the last couple of weeks. A few weeks ago, NASA released a study saying there was no Planet X object. They had done an infrared study of the solar system out to 20,000 or 26,000 astronomical units from the sun, tremendous distance, claiming there's nothing there. In the following week, other astronomers using optical techniques, visible light optical techniques, discovered more planets. They said they're up to 40, and I know they have many more than that. There are probably thousands of them. They said they only have just a tiny, tiny fraction of 1% of the objects discovered. They're expecting to find more and many big ones. And, of course, until they're discovered, they can't tell what kind of orbits these will be on. Will they stay out there far from the solar system? Or will there be some of them that come in to the solar system on regular orbits far into the solar system? These might have million-year orbits. All of this information that you've heard about a 3,600-year orbit for Planet X really is not true, because as far as Nibiru is concerned, the Venus event was around 3,600 years ago. That's what Velikovsky talks about. And you can see all of the various effects of a Planet X-type object when Venus, the comet, came through the solar system, eventually nestling into where the planet Venus is. This is explained, how this process of capture of a large comet, the process of building a planet and then moving into a stable orbit, is explained in my book. This is what the Planet X Comets and Earth Changes book is all about, the physics of how this happens. And this goes back to my original research when I was at Cornell University, 1979 to 81, and I was there as the data was coming in. I could see these effects in the data. And of course, this is when the space science and the astrophysics community just built a brick wall around their fairy tale science. And as the space program developed and progressed and more data came in, every time something new was discovered, they had to put another Band-Aid on their walls, on their ivory tower walls, to harbor and protect the Holy Grail theories, most of which came from around the 1950s, long before any spacecraft were ever built to go out and view the planets. But let me talk more about Planet X type of events. If a object just simply came near the sun, as we interacted with the solar surface, putting out a large solar pulse, a solar flare, CME, that could affect our Earth, it could affect our weather, it could affect radio communications, it could take out satellite systems. Depending on the size and the proximity of these, now remember that something that a lot of people, unfortunately, the public these days is not very scientifically savvy. But the end result is, let's imagine, let's play devil advocate and say there is an object, like a Nibiru-type object, a big thing, a Jupiter-sized object that comes into the solar system on a regular basis. I'm not going to put a year or time on it. This is a hypothetical example. It does not have to come near Earth every time. In fact, it probably wouldn't come near Earth every time. In Earth's history, we've had probably a dozen major mountain-building episodes along with mass extinctions where it takes the Earth down to the microcell level. That's how severe some of these events were. The Earth doesn't just jump up and do this all by itself. These are Planet X types of encounters, and more than likely, these all happen from individual different objects. So the people that are out there running around saying they see Planet X when they don't have any real data at all are simply trying to confuse the topic. The real issue is, yes, there are Planet X objects. No, people should not be making announcements that there are Planet X objects when they don't see anything, when they're making up the data. They're being supported by government misinformation groups to keep the topic off target. That's simply all it is. And if I find out real information, I'll pass it on to the public. And if I do, I will be giving you orbital data. I will give you information on where this object would pass through the solar system, not just, like I say at the beginning of the show, a picture of a robin on a snowbank, and somebody says, well, that's at the South Pole, and everybody's supposed to believe it. No, that's complete garbage. And that's what, unfortunately, is going on the Internet. But more regarding what a Planet X object might do, if it comes close enough, it could have gravitational effects, electrical effects, pollution events, and if it's large enough, if it connected electrically with Earth, it could literally take our oceans and atmosphere and drastically change them or pull it completely off, leaving us with a very faint atmosphere that would have to rebuild, just as Mars is doing today. Mars is rebuilding its atmosphere after Venus the comet removed its atmosphere and oceans just a number of thousands of years ago. The ancients saw it happen. They recorded it in the history books, but the people today, the scientists of today, refuse to look at the information, calling it fairy tale, mythology or whatever. So, at any rate, remember to visit my webpage, jmccsci.com, become water independent, and also make sure you get the new book, the water book, and the new book, RSA, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit, are free with any water filter purchase. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. The webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And good night. We'll talk to you next week.